And we'll move to our last case this morning. Case number 101590, United States versus Montanus. Mr. McGowan.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Andy McGowan. I'm with the Federal Public Defender's Office for the Central District of Illinois, and I represent the appellant in this case, Dr. John Montanus. At sentencing, the district court failed to adequately consider Dr. Montanus' argument that he was less likely than the average defendant convicted of child pornography to reoffend, for the reasons given in the brief and that I will give to the court today. We request that this court reverse his 17-and-a-half-year sentence. The very basic facts about Dr. Montanus support this argument. Kind of hard, because of all the facts about him in this case, to focus on the really basic facts, which are he's in his early 50s. He was a dentist. He had no prior criminal convictions. He had no drug abuse problems. He had a family, including three daughters, for many years. Those support a below-guideline sentence by themselves. However, in this case, we had a very detailed report by Dr. Carroll, who also opined that, in his opinion, Dr. Montanus was less likely than the average child pornographer to reoffend. Although the district court seemed to accept much of what Dr. Carroll said about Dr. Montanus, the district court rejected out of hand his conclusion that he was unlikely to reoffend. The district court said that Dr. Carroll's conclusion was unsupported because Dr. Carroll extrapolated in an unfounded way that Dr. Montanus would not reoffend because he had no child contact offenses. Now, there's no evidence in this case at all that he had ever inappropriately touched a child.
I thought that there were internet chat records in which the defendant said he had done that. I don't think the district judge credited them. But weren't those part of the record?
They were, and okay. Neither did the government credit them.
Sorry?
Neither did the government credit
okay.
them. In fact, those discussions are, you know, completely offensive. I understand that,
right.
But there was no evidence that he ever did anything like he said in those discussions. And if this court actually looks at those discussions, a lot of them, in fact, what I've seen anyway, are him responding to people. Did you do this? Yeah. Did you do that? Yeah. So, in any event, there's no physical evidence of that, and there was a DCFS investigation of his association with his family, for instance.
You just have the No Limits picture.
The No Limits picture is there. I'm not denying that it's not there, but it's not him doing something to that child, per se. In any event, my take on the district court's comment is just taking the government's argument at face value that the district court should not credit his not having no contact offenses as a mitigating factor. It's not an argument I've ever really seen before, but the government, for instance, at sentencing said, "Judge, and I do bring to your attention something that was mentioned in Dr. Carroll's testimony, and that is his conclusion that defendant has not molested any children. And, Judge, I don't stand here and purport to have evidence that he has, but given everything we know, given the studies that are out there to show underreporting, given the facts of this case, I just ask Your Honor not to accept that conclusion as a mitigating factor. It's simply not supported." As a result, without any evidence, the government just said, well, you take this several-page analysis that took many, many hours of the doctor's time, including 4 hours of interviewing the defendant himself, and say, forget about it. It doesn't matter because he's relying on something that we can't prove, but we think you shouldn't take into account. The other problem with the district court's analysis in this case was the district court's discussion of depression. And that, again, was part of Dr. Carroll's report, and it was a factor. And Dr. Carroll said, well, yeah, he suffers from recurrent major depressive disorder, but that's treatable. He's never really been diagnosed for it. He's never been given medicine for it. But there are antidepressants that would not only help him with that, they would help him with this hypersexual determination that Dr. Carroll also made. The district court used it on the one hand to give him a low guideline sentence and said, well, you know, I know you're depressed. I don't doubt that for a second. But I reject it as a basis for a lower than guideline sentence, even though Dr. Carroll said that it was treatable and that sort of thing. Additionally, the district court seemed to be relying on the idea that he was just depressed, which the district court said, well, almost everybody comes in here depressed, one out of five people. Nobody was arguing that at the sentencing. But the major depressive disorder is actually in a smaller percentage of the population. And the fact that Dr. Carroll believed that it was treatable is something that the district court disregarded. The way the district court rejected Dr. Carroll's conclusion that he was unlikely to reoffend, or that he was less likely than the average child pornographer to reoffend, reminds me to some extent of this court's case in Williams, where the district court took an evaluation that the defendant suffered from diminished capacity, and it had something to do with him committing the offense, and it should be used as a reason for a lower sentence, and said, oh, well, we've got this competency evaluation that said you were exaggerating this diminished capacity. And as a result, the district court didn't consider the arguments in mitigation at all. This court reversed that case, and we're asking that this court reverse in this case as well. Unless there are any questions, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for...
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Grimes.
May it please the court. Steve Grimes on behalf of the United States. The defendant has appealed his sentence, citing both procedural error and substantive unreasonableness by the district court. With respect to the first argument on procedural error, the district court conducted a more than meaningful analysis of each of the 3553A factors. The district court judge went through specifically the seriousness of the offense, the characteristics, the need to promote respect for the law, as well as the remainder of the 3553A factors in detail in what was a lengthy sentencing hearing. In the course of that sentencing hearing, the district court judge also respected and responded to the defendant's arguments, each of the defendant's arguments. On appeal, and specifically stressed today, the argument that Dr. Carroll, a defense expert who was hired and who testified before the sentencing court, concluded that the defendant was a low risk to reoffend. The district court took that on, head on. He heard the doctor testify. He saw the doctor testify. He saw that the doctor was contradicted on a number of occasions. He saw impeachment of that doctor during the cross-examination, as well as the doctor on cross-examination admitted that some of his methodology that he applied to conclude that the defendant was a low risk was actually unsupported by any published literature or any published studies. And having seen all that, the district court concluded that that doctor's conclusions and that, with respect to that particular argument, were unfounded, and he rejected them. That was more than adequate consideration, and certainly the court was within its discretion to do so. With respect to the argument that the defendant suffered from depression, the court also, again, considered that. In fact, the court credited the argument the defendant suffered from depression and specifically said he relied on that to give a low-end guideline sentence. That the court also extemporaneously said that one in five people do suffer from depression is not material because the court specifically said that he does not accept depression in any form, either major depressive or just run-of-the-mill depression, as a justification for the offense. The difference being the justification versus a mitigating factor that the court did acknowledge. With respect to defendant's argument that the court may have concluded, based on the government's argument, that the defendant had actually molested children or had contact, sexual contact with children. Again, that was never an argument that was made by the government. The government pointed to the defendant's own words, and relying on those own words, as well as published studies just ask the court not to accept the defendant's argument that because we couldn't prove that he had molested anyone, that he should get a below-guideline range sentence.
Mr. Grimes, at least the way I've understood these cases, the absence of contact crimes is basically assumed in the ordinary guideline calculation. If you've got evidence of contact crimes, then you've got a huge aggravating factor, both under the guidelines and under 3553A.
That's exactly right.
So your argument was pointing out simply the absence of an aggravator, and arguing the absence of that aggravator should not be a mitigating factor, a further mitigating factor. Is that right?
That's exactly right, Judge. And we pointed, mm-hmm. there are obviously specific guideline enhancements if there was contact. You pointed out that none of those were in play in this case, and therefore the sentence recommended by the guidelines in no way was assuming that the defendant had molested or had contact offense with children. In arguing that the defendant's sentence was unreasonable, defendant also points to the Second Circuit's decision, recent decision, United States v. Dorvey. The government believes that that decision was incorrectly decided and conflicts with controlling circuit precedent. This court has said on a number of occasions that a district court, while they may be required or they may be permitted to disagree with a certain guideline, they are not required to do so. Here the district court said specifically he agrees with the policy.
He wrote it.
Indeed he did. He agrees with the goals of eradicating child pornography, and he's certainly entitled and it's within his discretion to do so. So unless there are any further questions from the panel, I'd ask the court to affirm the sentence.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. McGowan, how much time? You've got 3 minutes.
Thank you. I'd like to address a few factors that the government has just talked about. Concerning the published articles, actually, Dr. Carroll relied on recent information that included about 1,500 child pornographers over 6 years, and he used that to determine their relative likelihood of recidivism, which is very low to begin with. I don't know exactly why that is. It could be that many of them are first-time offenders. Could be that the restrictions on their movement after they're out play a role. But for whatever reason, the recidivism for these defendants is actually pretty low based on the statistics. The district court rejected depression as a justification, but that's not exactly what Dr. Carroll was using it for. He was using it in part to say, well, that had something to do with the offense conduct. But he was also saying that this was treatable. He was talking about it in terms of whether he would reoffend when he got out, because it was treatable and because medication could help that and other things. And because Dr. Carroll actually recommended that he be supervised for 10 years when he's released, not just by the probation office, but by a doctor like Dr. Carroll to evaluate his progress. Those are the things that Dr. Carroll took to the judge as a basis why he wouldn't reoffend. Finally, even if the absence of contact offenses is assumed in the guidelines, it's no reason to simply throw out an entire evaluation. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. McGowan. And our thanks to both counsel and Mr. McGowan. You were appointed to represent your client in this case, and you have the thanks of the court for your service to your client and the court. The case is taken under advisement. That concludes today's call, and the court will be in recess until Tuesday morning at 9:00.